Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That every time there's the next step, I get it again. You know, like when I first did a 3,000 seater, I nearly passed out with the nerves going on. But now I can't wait to do 3,000 seaters because they're amazing. Or like when I did my first TV thing, I was just beside myself. I actually, the only time I've done it and I froze on stage and couldn't remember my words was that night. So there's still that aspect. But now I've done that, now I won't be scared next time. So it's just those sort of hurdles, those first times.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Balancing Acts. In this conversation, I chat with stand-up comedian Kelly Convey. Perfect. Hi, this is Steve Whiteley, comedian, actor, filmmaker and writer, all-round ADHD creative. And welcome to my new podcast, Balancing Acts, where I talk to an array of creatives ranging from comedians, actors, directors, all sorts. And we talk about how they find a sense of balance or not between their creative lives and their everyday lives and how that has an impact on their mental health and beyond. Balancing Acts is now made in association with The Comedy Crowd, who are a website and community that support independent comedy creators such as myself. I have a Comedy Crowd short, which is a 2-minute video, one of my characters, on their website. They showcase the best new videos on Comedy Crowd TV, which is comedycrowdtv.com, and across media platforms, so do go and check them out. Kelly was voted by the Metro as one of 9 hilarious women to look out for in 2017. She's a finalist in the South Coast Comedian of the Year and So You Think You're Funny competitions. She supported Russell Kane, Alan Carr, and most recently Adam Hills on a tour. This was a great conversation. We dived in deep on loads of stand-up related subjects, obviously. We talked about the struggles of labeling yourself a comedian, and Kelly talked about why no one needs to know her opinion on anything unless it's funny, and how publishing her opinions on Brexit made her realize that actually maybe keeping quiet on social media about her opinions was better, and that being too forthright is career suicide in her opinion when you're at an early stage in your stand-up career. She then goes on to explain how she observed when she was touring with more of these well-known comedians that they were able to talk about what they wanted once they built up their own brand, and she explains why that's the case. Kelly also talks about the challenges she faced when moving up from open mic gigs to paid spots and then onto higher profile gigs and being compared to more established and experienced comedians, while comparing herself to them and also her peers and the pressure that came with that. We talk about how performing in market towns for older demographics made her realize that if she wanted to be a countrywide comic in the mainstream, then she needed to appeal to a wider audience, and then how that changed her style of performance. She talks about how she purposely doesn't wear anything to sexualize herself to the audience and why she's okay with that. She describes her former career as a TV exec and then working in the travel industry, and how getting fired from her job led to her committing to stand up and gigging every night for the first 6 months, which eventually led to her getting signed to Off the Curb, the agents that represent her now. Kelly talks about her rapid progression from doing open mic gigs to then within 6 months performing 30-minute sets, which led to a bout of acute anxiety. She explains why, as a creative, you know, it's so important to really be professional and have a plan of how you're going to progress your career and realizing that you are your own commodity or product. She talks about why she doesn't like Edinburgh Fringe Festival and feels that it isn't necessarily the right platform for her comedy. Why it's so important to show people why and how something is funny in terms of your material. She talks about her approach to writing new material and how she prefers to not write rather than try and force something out, and how she got to a point where she was able to find her own rhythm in terms of writing new material. There was loads here. It was a really good conversation. And obviously, you'll hear from the audio. We did this over Zoom, obviously, because of social distancing and that. Got around with the times. So there's a slight difference in audio ambience. But I'm sure you're going to enjoy this conversation. So over to Kelly. Perfect. So how are you doing in quarantine?
Yeah, fine. Just been sort of doing housework and stuff. I haven't really done any comedy.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just because I'm just not in the mood, or I don't see any point, or I don't know. But been doing lots of DIY, which is always productive. But yeah, I suppose it's just adjusting now, and then settling into the next few months. Getting my head around that. I've been approached to do a few, you know, gigs online, especially with great exposure. And I just said no. I just think that I understand that people are still trying to earn some money, but then me standing in my kitchen doing stand up to an empty room it just fills me with dread, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a weird one with no laughter. Just like, where are you getting the job from?
Yeah, exactly. And I do know that, you know, I know a lot of people are trying to, you know, it's tough for them. And I do understand that you've got to just do what you can. But I just think sometimes putting out stuff that's shit is worse. Like, someone went live the other day. I can't remember who it was. But it was just on my thing. And it was just like, they're trying to adjust their microphone after going live. And
yeah,
I think that people are feeling like they have to be producing content, and I don't think you do.
I know, I'm, because I'm like caught in two minds. Like, I've been off, not off social media, but I've taken a massive step back lately just because I've been working on longer form projects that I'm writing, and so I just kind of like want to just be in my own little zone.
Yeah.
But you know, at the moment, obviously, I'm checking back in and you're just seeing what's going on, and everyone is posting stuff. And there is part of you that thinks, oh, should I not be creating content at this time when, you know, everyone else is? And, you know, just to remind people you're out there, and also just to be creative as well.
Yeah. I do. There's a part of me, obviously, I have this sort of guilt that I'm carrying, that I'm not doing anything. And I think that's the nature of what we do. And when we first start, is like, you just do any gig anywhere at any time.
Yeah.
And like, then it all stops. And then you feel like, not a failure, but almost that you're not putting anything into going forward with this. But I mean, I think everyone's in the same boat, and the pressure to put out content. Like, I've been thinking of ideas that I can, you know, film over time and put something decent out, you know, like something that's not just fucking me sat in my kitchen. Like, I don't know. So, you know, I just had like little ideas of, you know, getting dressed up for dinner and having like a, you know, sort of ball gown on or something like that, but like filming it properly.
Yeah.
You know, I think everyone feeling in the rush to stick something out there. And I get it. Like, we, you know, we already had this plan. If you already got something going, you're so right to keep it going. But I think everyone suddenly trying to set something up.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, And I think that I don't know, I'm not the font of all knowledge, but I personally feel like I just don't, oh, I'm not going to start suddenly creating these live streams. You know, I'm not DJ Z. I'm not going to be starting doing, you know, like some
I only came across that yesterday. Oh my
Bloody
God.
Amazing.
What a legend.
Yeah, 24 hours he did.
24-hour set, just playing old school bangers. Do you know what's so funny? I started scrolling through the contents, then you've got like, obviously, like newbies, or not newbies, but like younger generations going, oh my God, he's the best EDM DJ out there. And it's like, mate, he's a bloody garage DJ and he's been doing it for years.
Yeah, yeah, he's old school, man.
Yeah, he is. But I think you're right, though. I think you just got to listen to your like your gut or your intuition. But I feel like you've always been really good at like all the branding side of things. Like how, from like the get-go, were you always very clear in terms of like how you wanted to brand yourself as a comedian? Or what your brand was? Or was that sort of, did that develop as you developed your material and as a comedian?
Yeah, I think that definitely develops and still continues to develop, because, I mean, when we first met, I was doing like open mics and singles, you know, all my material was about like, woe betide me, I can't find a man. And shocker, that is not great branding. it's not the most appealing. And then it evolved, and I improved as a comedian, and I learned my craft a lot more, because I think that is something that you can't just be good at it from the off. Like, you need to learn and understand what you're trying to say. And then when I, you know, got in a relationship, I think that evened me out as a person, but also evened out my viewpoint and where I'm coming from with a lot of my jokes.
Okay.
So I think that what I say on stage will always reflect on my social media, because it's always about me. But in terms of the branding, I think I've always kind of understood that less is more. And I think that what do you want out of this? Like, what do you as the, like when I'm online and I'm seeing things on Facebook and stuff, do I want people to see me as that? I think it's not really about comedy, but a massive lesson for me was when Brexit first started happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I had quite a strong opinion about remaining. And I, for the first and only time, I started putting my opinion online. And what that did was, it just drew out all the people from Kent, all my family members, all friends from home who are against what I was saying or saying things. And I realized that this is not my place for my opinion. Like, and think that's the downfall of social media, because I feel like everyone feels the need to sort of express their opinion. I'm just there just to put out my gigs, you know, and I learned to just keep my mouth shut online, actually. So if you were to look at a timeline of my social media, it used to be bombardment of information and all of this stuff. And now it's few and far between, really. And I learned that lesson because, especially as a comedian.
Do you find it hard to say that? Do you find it hard to describe yourself as a comedian?
I don't find it hard, but I think that there's not any way of saying it without sounding like you're being a bit pompous.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean? Yeah, as a naturally very professionally funny person.
Yeah.
And my opinion on this is, I think it's almost like it sounds like it gives you this sort of otherworldly opinions on things, when actually we're probably the most sort of lost people in the world. So I don't feel like, and I know a lot of people go down that route, but for me, I feel comedy is escapism, and no one needs to know my opinion on anything unless it's funny.
Yeah. I think that's, I mean, everyone's got their own view on it. I mean, that's the great thing, isn't it, about comedy? Everyone's got their own individual approach to it. Some people use it as a platform to get their opinions out. But I think at the end of the day, the rule is, as long as it's funny, just make it funny, like, rather than preaching.
Yeah. Well, I think if you're always constantly churning out your opinion and your political views and all of that stuff, it can completely mar and take away from your joke.
Mm-hmm.
Like, like, I'm not there as a politician. I'm not there, like, I for example, I mean, I think Boris has done a great job during this whole coronavirus. And am I going to put that online? Absolutely not. Because it's, that's the whole point of politics, that other people would disagree with that. And as soon as I put that up there, that can change the perspective of my fans, in air quotes, you know. And then all of a sudden they don't see my point of view anymore. It's a really interesting thing, like sort of touring with well-known names and being tour support. And they've built their brand and it's established. And then they can go on to talk about what they want. Because people know that even if it's an opinion that is opposing to theirs, they know the personality of that person enough to understand where that's coming from. And I don't command that sort of understanding yet. I'm nowhere near that. I'm 10 years away from that.
Yeah.
So for me to start chirping up online and you know, giving my opinion out like it's valuable to someone is just, it's like career suicide, I think, you know. Then you look at the likes of, like, I think, someone who said it to me. They're like, yeah, but you know, Romesh and that, and like Russell Cain, they're all doing like, because it's Russell Cain. You know, Russell Cain can go live and talk about whatever he likes because he's done 18 years of hard graft to be able to do that. I'm not gonna go online and start. I mean, what am I gonna do? Go live and show you how I mop my floor? I mean, like my housewife's skills, you know. But I think it's all relative, and I think it's all common sense, and like being honest with yourself, you know. I think there's a real jump up when you're talking about comedy, of like going from open mics to then getting paid on the circuit to then sort of doing a bit more of the higher profile stuff. But the problem is when you make those jumps, you are then automatically compared to the people on that level, mm-hmm. by yourself and your peers. And there's no way that I am in any way near the same ballpark as the people that I'm on a bill with.
Do you find yourself feeling under pressure when you, because obviously you've done tour support with the likes of Russell Cain, and then more recently, I think Adam Hills, didn't you? You've been supporting.
Yeah, Alan Carr.
Yeah, which is amazing. Yeah. Amazing opportunities. Did you find yourself feeling under pressure opening for those guys, or were you just like, I'm just going to go out and do my thing?
I think the first one, on each one, I felt pressure. And then they're so incredible. Incredibly skilled but incredibly wonderful people that I never felt inferior or imposter or anything like that. Never really feel that. It's just more about proving myself. But every one of those gigs are different. Like Russell Cain's audience is different to Alan Carr's, to Adam Hills. And particularly with Adam Hills and Alan, they were doing work in progress shows in tiny little towns that are like you'd never heard of before, you know, Market Drayton, Bakewell, Leek.
Love it there.
These places are just, you know, I mean, who doesn't love Leek? That's, I mean, and they're weird. That's like, that go in there. If you can make those people laugh, you can make anyone laugh, because it's a very, they're all very similar people. They're all a bit older demographic. They're very white.
Right.
They're very of one sort of opinion.
So did you find did you find performing at those kind of those towns or venues, did that inform the material that you wrote for gigs going forward, for similar gigs?
Yeah, massive lesson learned that if you want to be a countrywide, you know, comic that like is in the mainstream and selling out rooms like that, you you need to appeal to a wider audience. It doesn't mean that you change your opinions or change what you're saying. It's just how you say it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I've become a softer comedian as I've gone forward. Whereas when I first started out, I was quite aggressive. More just probably because of my nerves, but I felt that the rooms that I was doing, that worked better. And if you go and do like a rough gig, like in a working man's club, and it is rough when you walk in, I still have that on the back burner. But if you're going into a market town in the whitest part of England, where they're all, you know, over the age of 60, going in and walking in and being all like, what? it's not going to work. So you have to kind of, I always say that, like, because a lot of people say, because I have to dress a certain way when I go on stage, I have to desexualize myself, I have to wear something that's like loose and fitting.
But you didn't used to, did you? Have you changed that?
Big time. Either wear dungarees or a very flowing skirt and dress, because what I've noticed is that if I wear anything that's sexualized, it really takes a very long time for the audience to warm to me.
Wow, interesting.
It's just, but like someone said to me, like a bit more of a feminist kind of person, just like, doesn't that bother you? You shouldn't have to change the way that you dress when you go on the stage. Of course you do. Of course you do. You can't change human nature.
Mm.
So as much as it's shit and I want to wear what I want to wear, I want to do well at my job.
Mm.
It's the same as a plumber turning up in a thong. It's inappropriate. And actually, what happens when you walk out on the stage is that immediately before you've said anything, before you got to the microphone, they have judged you on the way that you look. So you either play ball or you struggle. Mm. And I feel like, you know, I was on with Josh Jones up in Nottingham, and I'd packed badly. I don't know why, but it was two-nighter sort of thing. And on the Friday night, great, and I was emceeing, and then I was like, oh, no, I've only got this to wear tonight. And he was like, what's wrong with that? And then it's like, guaranteed, it will be a tougher night for me tonight. He's like, oh, don't be stupid. And it was just very tight, fit, like skinny jeans and like a little top. But it was too revealing. And I'd come off from the first section. He went, bloody hell, I can't believe it. And he saw it from one night to the next. But that's the game. You know, if you walk out on the stage, look at all the big names like Lee Evans and stuff. Like, you know, he had his suits. He would sweat through those suits, but it was because he was performing and was the star of the show and wanted to show himself in a certain way. Catherine Ryan looks stunning on stage. She's earned that.
Yeah.
But all of the things, the way that you approach the gig, the first 10 seconds that you're on the stage will set the tone going forward, big time.
So do you, in terms of your persona, is your persona you 100% you think, or have you said more of a heightened version of you, as is, you know, I guess that's running theme of the majority of comedians. It's very rare for people to just be 100% themselves on the stage.
No, I don't think. I think it's very much me. I think, like some comedians, you will meet, and there will be a completely different person on and off the stage.
Yeah.
You know, very like, you know, can't make eye contact. Very nervous person on off stage. And they walk on, and they're like, "God, is it?" You're like, "What the hell happened there?" So I'm very much the person I am on stage, but I would say that I am the person I am plus adrenaline.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, makes sense.
So and also just on the basis of, like I said before, the room and stuff, you know, if they're all being like heckling and stuff,
yeah,
I'll definitely be more my original roots of like Chatham Kent person.
Yeah.
Or if I go to Tunbridge Wells, I might be a little bit more East Dulwich like I am now.
Okay.
It depends if I'm buying brioche or Hovis, really.
So, like, just take a step back. Before you got into stand-up, were you working in TV?
I worked in television for, about 7 years.
Yeah.
What
were you doing?
TV shows.
Okay.
So I was global acquisitions for Fox, international channels. I started out as a PA and then just progressed through the ranks sort of thing. So I was doing that for about 7 years. And then I left TV and I did a travel job for a year for Expedia. And I travelled the UK and I went to a different place every week with my bulldog, Nelson.
Big up, Nelson.
Big up. Yeah, he's
actually been the one away. He's been the one consistent theme for running through your social media right from the off.
That's true.
That's very much part of the Kelly Comedy branding.
Yeah, he is. He's my bubba. He is my bubba Shde. Me and Nelson went around the country for a year. And then I started to do my own blog when that finished, because it was only every year.
Okay.
Dating with your dog.
Okay.
Did about 3 blogs, but it made people laugh, and that was kind of set the little seed. And then I started doing a wine job for the International Wine and Spirits Competition.
Okay.
I was doing that for 6 months, and I got fired for getting paralytic drunk in Düsseldorf at a conference called Provine.
Okay.
And I got fired from that job, and on the same day that I had my 3rd stand-up gig. So I got fired, got really drunk, went to go and do my 3rd ever stand-up gig.
Yeah.
And made a fool out of myself at the Cav. And I woke up the next morning and just thought, what are you doing? You've found something you really love and you've just got fired for being drunk all the time. And then that totally changed my opinion of sort of stand-up. Well, it had to, because I didn't have a job or anything else to do. So I just really applied myself, took it very seriously. I wrote a different 5 minutes every gig.
Yeah, I remember you saying that. I was like, wow.
Yeah, not for long. That didn't last long. And then just applied myself. I just gigged every single night for about 6 months. And then was in So You Think You're Funny and all that jazz. And then Curb signed me after a year of doing stand-up.
Yeah, it was like rapid trajectory.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Like it's just an example of someone, I think it's just, you just focus right from the off. Like you just kind of, you had a goal, you knew what you wanted and you just went for it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I didn't have much choice either. I think that obviously I'd found what I wanted to do. The first second I walked on the stage, because I'd never been on stage before in my life.
Had you never performed in any shape before? Really? Okay.
No drama school or stand-up courses here. I'd never done anything on stage. And as soon as I went up there and I started, I went, oh my God, this is exactly what I'm meant to be doing. And so I just really hunkered down and I just really focused and I just really went for it. And luckily for me, I think that it was I think this is the best time to be a female in comedy. I think that agents were looking to get more women on their books. I was right time, right place. My agent, C, as a whole, off the curb, they couldn't be more suited to me. If, you know, I mean, the acts that they have, but also the agents. Like my agent's like a proper little geezer.
Right.
It all works really well. And it all worked perfectly. It was like, oh, I'm home. Okay, great. But that said, I mean, it sort of gave me severe anxiety.
Did it?
And yeah.
What aspects of it?
Well, I didn't know that it was anxiety, to be honest. I started nearly passing out. and I went to the doctors and he was like, you've got acute anxiety. I was all like, oh, okay. I think it was just you've gigged, you know, and going from that to getting signed to the biggest agent and whoa, okay, I'm doing like 300 seaters, and they were like, right, we need to do half an hour. I didn't have half an hour. I was like, yeah, of course, I've got half an hour. I can do half an hour. And, you know, going up there in my infancy of like not being skilled enough to be playing those rooms. And I remember when I first got signed, I got sent to, it was somewhere on the coast, and it was like a massive Christmas day. Right. I hadn't got signed yet. They started talking to me in September, and this was the December, and they signed me in the March. But this gig, it's a tough gig, I know now anyway. There was like 500 people in this room, and it was a Christmas do, so everyone was drunk. And I went up, and as I was walking up to the stage, some woman was so drunk, she pulled the whole table that she was sitting on over, everything. But because I was so new and inexperienced, I just went up and ignored that had happened and that she was getting accosted out by security, and just went into my set. And I'm pretty sure it started out with like 7 minutes on masturbation or something ridiculous like that. And, you know, it was that. It was sort of like having to run before I could walk. And I'm glad, because it was like a crash course, and now 3 years down the line, I don't really, there's not really a room that particularly scares me, because I had to sort of just get on with it. Mm-hmm. And like, I've learned just really, really quickly, and really, you know, and some, it's really tough situations. Yeah, that was 30 minutes of me standing there dying on my ass because I hadn't acknowledged the fight that was going on in the room, and then just verbatim went on with my set, just like, and it was all this crude stuff, because a lot of my early days stuff was quite crude, and they're all just sitting there with their like forks hanging out of their mouths, just still like, what is this girl doing? Like, why is she, and you know, and just things like that. I think that was, it was just, you've got to do this now.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the long run, it has really benefited me, because I still do get, like, you know, certain things, like, you know, the next step, every time there's the next step, I get it again, you know, like when I first did a 3,000 seater, I nearly passed out with the nerves going on. But now I can't wait to do 3,000 seaters because they're amazing. Or like when I did my first TV thing, I was just beside myself. I actually, the only time I've done it and I froze on stage and couldn't remember my words was that night. So there's still that aspect. But now I've done that, now I won't be scared next time. So it's just those sort of hurdles, those first times, and then you're done. And then it's like, oh, it wasn't so bad after all, and carry on.
So do you have anything that you put in place to like counteract when you get feelings of anxiousness or anxiety? Do you meditate, or is there anything particular that you do? You think, all right, I've got those feelings coming on. I need to like deal with this.
I mean, to be honest, when I went to the doctor, he stuck me on some like sertralin stuff.
Okay.
And that really helped. So I took that every day. I take that every day. So that really helps. I'm very much of the, I have a go at myself, and I just sort of slap myself around the face and just be like, get a grip, get on with it. Probably okay. Not the best advice for people that are suffering with anxiety. It's all something that's quite new to me. Never really had that. It's been a few years now, but I don't know, it's something that I've never really had before. Didn't even know what it was when I first got it. I just thought I was getting dizzy and stuff. And so I mean, I'd be lying to say that I do any meditation or anything that's actually productive to help him with it. I take a tablet in the morning and slap myself and forget it's really bad.
Bish, bosh, bash.
Yeah, probably not the best advice. So.
That was whatever's working for you, I guess. So it was working for you. Perfect.
Hello, sorry to interrupt in the middle of this insightful conversation, which I'm enjoying, I'm sure, just as much as you are. But I need to give you guys a little reminder. If you like this conversation, this episode, if you like balancing acts in general, then please do subscribe to us, rate and review us, because it makes the world of difference. And the more reviews we get, the more rates we get, the more people can discover the podcast and we can make it go viral, whatever that means. Okay, back to the chat.
Have you developed a lot of friendships through comedy since you started? Like, do you find there's a support system in place, or because obviously you've got your own crew of mates, you've had different careers and whatnot before you got into comedy, so you've got your own circle of friends. Do you sort of very much, you're like, okay, these are my circle of friends and then this is my career? Or have you found that you've developed lots of friendships through comedy? And if so, has that been helpful and like supportive for you? Because obviously other people can relate to you when you're talking about situations, when you're talking about getting anxiety, performance anxiety, that type of thing. Like, oh yeah, I suffer from that as well. Mm. Yeah. What's your take on that?
I think I've definitely made a lot of friends and lots of relationships with people that I really enjoy being around and I really like. I do think that there's a much closer knit sort of click within comedy that I'm not really part of. I think that's to do with the fact that a lot of these people have just done it straight from uni or yeah. their drama schools or wherever. It's the only thing they've ever known, whereas I've had a very corporate professional life, and then this has happened later in my life. So I feel like probably don't have that connection that some people do, where you can see it up in Edinburgh where people are very tight-knit group, and I'm definitely on the outskirts of that. Not that that's not that I don't think there's anyone in comedy that I don't get on with, but everyone's a really nice person. But I think that can be an issue when you first start out. I remember when I first started that within the sort of year groups of people, they do have their little insular unit, and you can feel like you're almost back at school again.
Yeah.
When you're like, well, if I'm not part of the popular group, then I'm not going to get on, all right? But that's bullshit. I think in this is my job, and even in this corona stuff, this is my job. This isn't what do you call it? I don't know how to describe it, but I think it's very hard for people outside of this to understand that this isn't just a jolly, and I'm not just doing this for a fun.
Yeah,
this is my job, and I take it very seriously. So I'm not in it for anything other than to get on and do my job. And I'm not the sort of comedian that's going to go on my night off and go and watch comedy night.
Okay.
Not because I don't like comedy, but I have a life and I have my fiance and a house and a dog to look after. I'm very much a homing bird, and I like... So I think because I've had that corporate jobs and all that stuff before,
yeah,
I separate it completely. Whereas some people, it is their life, and that's great, and more for them. But I take it seriously to the point where I'm like, right, this is what I need to do. This is where I need to go. This is the plan, and this is how we're going to go forward. Rather than, indulging in Facebook groups and the like. I'm careful to say that because I don't want to anyone that enjoys doing all of that commenting and all that stuff and being in those little cliques. That's great. I'm not downplaying that. But there is a reason why I'm not part of those things.
Yeah. And I think also going back to what you're saying about having a corporate career before, I think there's massive advantages to that, because I'm similar to you and I've had I've done different jobs and had careers prior to getting into all this. And I think it can help in so many ways because you've had that experience of whether it was an office job or being in a professional environment, you perhaps transfer that mindset to your comedy career. So it's not all just fun and games. And it's not just juggling balls. It's your work. So, but sometimes I don't know about you. Sometimes there's pros and cons to that though, because sometimes I'm too just like focused, and sometimes you think, oh, you just need to step back and just like, you know, enjoy the process and not just think, oh, what's the next goal?
Yeah, I think that it's a balance of that. But I do think that the curse of the creative and the person that kind of is creative first and commercial second is that they can miss the opportunities that are there for them in terms of progressing in their career and sort of seeing that those opportunities and how you conduct yourself. You know, how you present yourself, how you conduct yourself, how you're going to drive this forward, how you are your business, you are your commodity. How are you going to grow that and make it? You know, when I was talking about the outfit thing earlier, that wasn't just like, oh, I'll just wear that. I've tried loads of things, glasses off, glasses on, hair up, hair down, all this stuff, because you're the person that needs to make the formula work. And you're the person that needs to present it to people. So I do feel quite fortunate in the fact that I have had that schooling of commercial, you know, corporate experience, and particularly in the industry that I want to be in the end, it's obviously television. Because it always amazes me, like when people say, they give you the call sheet and it's like 2 hours before. Well, you know what comedians are like. What? Like, because they're always late, aren't they? They never turn up. And it always amazes me when you're sat in a green room and it's like 5 minutes to start and you're going, oh, if you want, I can go on first because that person's not here yet. And they're like, oh, no, it's just the way that comedians are. I'm like, really? I remember phoning up a venue. I wasn't going to be late, but I was stuck in a bit of traffic. And I phoned her, I said, oh, look, I'm not going to be late, but I'm going to be close to the start time. So I don't want you panicking. She was like, honestly, in like the 10, 15 years I've been doing this job, not one person has ever called. And I was like, what? How is this possible? And I think that but I just think that's a creative mind, you know, and I definitely have a creative mind, but I always have a business mind. And I think that those two things can work alongside each other, but they're definitely not something that are the same.
No, you've got to, some people are blessed and they've just automatically able to be able to balance those two mindsets together. But for others, like for me, it took a while to get to a point where I was like, okay, how can I integrate them both and figure out, like you said, you're your own business. How can you apply that to yourself? Like if you've got an entrepreneurial side to you, or just like, whether you're like that way inclined business wise, how can you apply that to yourself? It's quite a weird thing when you think about it. It's like, it's one thing like applying it to a business, right? This is my product, this is my service, but you're your own product. So like you've got to like, step inside your own head. Do you know what I mean? And think about, and then also look at yourself from an outsider's perspective. How am I viewed? You know?
Yeah, most definitely. I think that like you are a commodity and you need to almost be looking at yourself in the third person at all times. When you post that, how's that going to affect you? What does that say about you? My Facebook memories came up the other day, and I don't know, about 6 years ago, I posted a 7-minute long Snapchat video of my Halloween. What was I thinking? like what was it? But because I didn't have that tie, now I'm not going to be posting things like that. You know, it annoys people. It annoys people, and I don't want to annoy people. I want to entertain them, and I think less is more sometimes.
Yeah. So going back to what you say about you briefly touched upon Edinburgh. How was because you did your debut hour last year? how was that experience for you?
I fucking hated it, mate.
Did you?
Well, you know, I don't like. Sorry to say,
No, it's fine.
You know, you know, I don't like Edinburgh. I've never liked Edinburgh. Sorry, Fringe. I don't like it out there. I don't like any of it. I don't feel like the audiences are reflective of the general public, of the people that I see it for the 11 months of the year. It's not just the people, but it's the environments, the way that they're stood out in the rain and then they're hoarded into these boiling rooms. There's nothing showbiz about it. I know that I'm probably like a priest standing on a Bible right now, but I just don't really see the point of Edinburgh. I don't really see the point. That's not the right thing to say. I personally don't feel like I benefit from Edinburgh whatsoever. I feel like it's a long month. I don't feel like a comedian when I'm there. I find it quite detrimental to the development of my material.
So in what way?
For my debut, I had been on tour with Alan Carr for like a year and a half before that and had the best time of my life. But that's representative of the general public, you know, what you're doing as a comedian, as a professional comedian. Every night of the week, you're doing at least 150 to 200, 300 theatres, 400 theatres, right? That's your job, 11 months of the year. I'd done some tour with Russell Kane, and I developed some jokes in those rooms. So over time, those jokes have built and become some of my biggest jokes. Then you put it in a boiling hot room where I had sweat in my eyes, paying an absolute fortune for, with a tech that couldn't even start my microphone. That's.
And this isn't a decent venue, right? This is not Free Fringe.
It's not Free Fringe. No, it's certainly not Free Fringe. And I'm doing a joke. For example, one of my jokes and developed sort of with Alan is about getting the audience to do almost like a auction style run up of who's got the most longest relationship in the room, mm-hmm. to lead to my punchline. And you go, right, 5 years, 10 years, 8 years, okay, like you go around the room. How do you do that with eight people and five of them in the same family? You know, that whole section of my, it's just gone. Mm-hmm. And that's, I don't know, like, it always sounds like I'm moaning or blaming or whatever. It's just not my environment. It's not the environment that I work in 11 months of the year. Mm-hmm. I went up there with all the hopes and, you know, I enjoyed my show. And then after about two shows, I hated my show. Didn't want to go out there every night. How many people we got in tonight? 12. Great. Like, I don't want to like bash Edinburgh too much. I love my job 11 months of the year, and then 1 month of the year, just absolutely hate it.
So does that mean are you done with it then? Will you go back and do another show in the near future, or are you leaving it for
now? I certainly wasn't going this year. I don't know if Edinburgh is going to happen. But as soon as I said to my agent I wasn't going, I started writing again. I like a whole weight lifted off my shoulders.
Interesting.
And mainly because I'm meant to be getting married in July, and I wasn't gonna let Edinburgh ruin my wedding. Mm-hmm. And that's how much I can't stand the bloody place. I love the actual place. I love Edinburgh, the city. But the Fringe, I literally, the thought of doing the Fringe a month after my wedding would have ruined my wedding. That's how much I can't stand it out there. So, but in the back of my mind, I know that I have to do another show. Mm-hmm. So
why do you have to?
I think my agent would like me to.
Okay.
You know, what he, I do go on his advice, and he knows exactly what he's doing. I feel that industry are lazy, and that's the only place they go and watch people.
And when you say industry, you mean as in TV industry?
Bookers and things like that. If by like next year, I don't, if I've established myself enough, mm-hmm. Absolutely never again. If I was in a position, I'm a business person. If it means that I have to go in order to get more profile, I'm going.
Go. Yeah, yeah.
And I'll hate sense. It and I'll eat shit for a month.
Yeah.
But if I've grown my profile enough to not ever go again, then I'll be a very happy lady.
So I take it you were, when you were there, you weren't going out on the piss in the evenings?
No.
You just feel you do your show then. So what, for the most part, you do your show, then you just chill at home? Chill at wherever you're staying?
Yeah, just stay at home and watch Madeleine McCann documentary for most of the month, which is even more depressing. Because I just wanted to know what happened in the end, you know?
Did you find out?
No, it's hidden. Still don't know.
Nail in the coffin.
No one knows. It's like making a murder all over again.
Yeah.
I just watched a documentary series and wallowed in my own self-pity for a month.
I can relate.
Yeah. It's, for some people, it's amazing, and good luck to them. You know, I think there are certain style of comedian that works really well up there, the theatre style. Whether those comedians work in, you know, a working men's club in Mark and Drayton is another story, but...
I can't remember where I was reading it, or even if I was talking to someone about it. There's two different types of comedians. You've got like more club comedians but what you're saying isn't necessarily a club, you know, where the venues you're talking about, but you have certain comedians that are suited to that, maybe a specific type of audience that would do well in clubs, and those audiences might not necessarily go to Edinburgh. And you have some comedians who will just be working towards Edinburgh every year and being on, let's call it an alternative circuit, with the aim that that Edinburgh show is what ends up opening doors and creating opportunities for other things in their career.
Yeah, for sure. Both of those styles of comedian have complete worth within themselves, like both of them do. Some people will be touring theatres, and those comedians will take the show to Edinburgh. They'll do it great. They'll take it around the country. And that's what they're looking to do, and that's great. I would also love to tour, but I think I would love to tour reverse of that. So I would like to tour after establishing myself in an opposite way. Mm-hmm. So I think there's different ways of doing that.
For sure. Build up your own audience and fan base, and then tour off the back of that.
Yeah, I think the difference between the two comedians is either someone that's touring with something to say, and then people are coming to a show that's happening,
mm-hmm.
or people that are coming to a name.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. But I mean, I'm neither of those things right now, you know, and I'm years away from being those things. And I'm realistic about that.
Were you realistic from the off, or has it taken you a while to think, oh shit, this is long haul?
I think when I first started doing stand-up, I would never have thought that I would get signed to the Curb in the speed that I did,
mm-hmm.
and how quick I did. But then when I got signed to Curb, and there was quite a few news articles out that one of the top five comedians to look out for, blah, blah, blah. Somehow, I don't know how all that happened, but there was quite a bit of press, and I got nominated for the Leicester Mercury's way too early. But there was quite a bit of thing about me, and I was like, no, I'm going to be like, be a star, mate.
This is it.
Yeah. And then I did that 500 seater and exit a Christmas gig and realized it's going to be a long slog.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, you can get something might happen, a few things might happen. You're like, oh, this is it. I'm on my way. But guaranteed, there's something around the corner that's always going to bring you crashing down to reality.
Yeah. And I think that's the beauty of comedy.
Yeah. You need that.
Like, yeah, you're only as good as your last gig. And I think that's something that I learned with Adam Hills, actually, who's the nicest man. His audiences were very different to if I could choose the room, you know. And that kind of humbling of, oh God, there are people out there that don't really understand me. And I just, I think the humbling nature of comedy is the best. If you meet anyone that's like doing really well in comedy, they're the nicest person. And it's because they know, they get it. They've been there. They understand it. Everyone has to go through the same process. And they know how hard it is to make people understand you. And I think that is the key to it, is anything is funny if you find it funny, then someone else will find it funny, but you need to show them why it's funny and how it's funny and what perspective that you're coming from. And that's something that I don't know how long it will get to. I mean, I'm starting to understand. I know that that's what I need to be doing, but it's just experience time and time again, gig after gig, that will give you that talent.
Yeah.
That tool, that.
It's a muscle.
Yeah, definitely.
And what's your approach to writing? Where do you write from? And like, do you need, is there a particular times of the day that you find you're most productive?
I usually think in my head a lot.
Okay.
I like all the time, like constantly. I'll be mopping or hoovering or out doing the shopping, and I'm always thinking. It might be the same joke for a week, but I'm always thinking. Which is probably not great for my headspace, because it is like a bit of noise the whole time. Or someone will say something and I'll be like halfway through a conversation with them and look like I'm still listening, but I'm just thinking.
Yeah.
But then to actually sit down and write, I have to be in the right frame of mind. I won't do it. Like, I won't force myself to do it. So I won't go, right, every day at 1 o'clock I sit down and do some writing. I'll just wake up that day and go, you know, I'm in the mood for writing.
Yeah.
And then I write. I sort of said about it earlier, it's after my debut, I don't think I wrote any new material for about 3 months.
Oh, really?
Because it just got in my head, and it sucked my confidence. And then as soon as I said I wasn't going back, I just, it all came. And I find that I'd rather not write then try and force something out. Just leave it. It's when, and because what happens is if I'm in the right frame of mind and I'm in the right mood, I could write a whole half an hour bit.
Yeah, you just flow.
You know, yeah, just flow and go, and it all comes out. I always have my notebook on me. It's always in my handbag. I'm always, if it's something comes, I'll note it. But if I'm not in the right frame of mind, then I just get more frustrated and more disappointed in myself that nothing's come in.
Yeah.
Why can't you think of anything funny? You're meant to be doing this. Why can't, you know, that's not healthy.
Yeah.
Just one day I'll just have this feeling. I'm like, I'm in the mood today. I've got it.
Yeah.
And then I'll write. I think that's the way I do it. I mean, whether that's productive or not, I don't know, but.
Well, it's working for you.
Well, when I first started, I used to write every single day. And I look back through that. I've got all the notepads up there. But
I remember you posted, I can't remember what it was, but it was like of a whiteboard and you had
all these
like notes in there. And I was like, oh, shit, that's serious.
Yeah, because do you know why I had to do that? It's because I decided to do a half an hour show. I think the first ever Hastings Fringe.
Okay.
And I'd been going about a month.
Yeah, but do you know what? Sometimes naivety is the best thing, even though it can be a car crash. Like I did my debut at Edinburgh 3 months in to doing stand-up. I didn't know. I had no idea. I didn't even realise that. You're supposed to like build it up and do 20. You know, the whole thing. I was just. But in the end, it did kind of work out eventually. So,
I think ignorance is bliss.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
My first show at the Hastings Fringe was half an hour long and it was called Taboo. It was called Taboo and it was all like, oh God, it was all basically sex-based, and it was all these poor old people from the Hastings old town just sitting there going, what the fuck is this? But I'm glad, you know, I am glad that I did that. I think that it's almost like you just find your own rhythm. Because I used to like militantly like write every day. I think that's because I didn't have a job and I didn't have any security within this. And still I don't. I mean, obviously. I mean, I don't even know when I'm going to ever work again. But
that insecurity, is that particularly relevant to now with Corona or even before? Do you always have a feeling of like, I don't know what's around the corner?
I think there is a definite security with Curb. You know, I think being signed to them, they have a lot of gigs, they look after me, they've always got my best interests at heart, and I love them to pieces. So there's always that security level there. But because I want to impress them so much, if I have a bad gig, not so much anymore, but when I first started out, I'd like not have that great a gig and be driving home going, they're going to drop me, they're going to drop me, they're going to drop me. Mm. And I think that they're not going to do that. Or I hope they wouldn't. But that's always there. It's like I do rely on being signed to them. And I think that's definite reliance. But now we're in Corona, bless them, they've still been like, you know, trying to get me bits and bobs and seeing what they can do. But there's no security whatsoever going forward. So I think that is, I'm very fortunate to have the setup that I have prior to comedy, and my partner, he's, you know, he's going to be my cash cow for a while. I'm very lucky in comparison to other people, so I'm not going to sit here and moan, but it's not worrying. I don't think I'm worried. I'm just totally have no idea. I have no clue. Mm. There's no certainty of anything, of when it's going to all start again. And I mean, we are really the key people of like mass gatherings, you know, even if people go back to normal work, but you have to have social distancing. It's very uncertain.
Yeah, you have to be playing in stadiums that allow for social distancing. So it'd just be a quarter of the amount of people.
A 20,000 seater with 100 people.
Exactly, yeah. That was great. It was like an intimate gig and just spread out over 50,000 feet.
Sounds like my bloody debut. Empty room.
Oh, yeah, tell me about it. Yeah, that was, yeah, my, I'm just having flashbacks to my Edinburgh Fringe debut. It was first 2 weeks were above a pub, and it was at midnight. And the only people come in were just like pissed geezers from downstairs, and they just have no idea it was a show, and they just start shouting abuse at me. apart from that, it's pretty much empty room for 2 weeks. I just used it as a rehearsal, and then I moved into a ticketed venue, and it was sort of like I had a bit of a slicker show because I had 2 weeks worth of rehearsal above this empty pub. War stories.
Sweet memories.
Yeah, exactly. What was I going to say to you? I was going to say, I was just actually back to the writing thing. Do you still use stuff like the whiteboard and that kind of thing? Or is it just more of a like casual, like you said, you got ideas that just pop out and then you do it, just write in your notepad?
I wrote in my notepad. I did use the whiteboards for my last Fringe. Just, I have quite a visual memory.
Okay.
So I can remember things, like I can remember how things look when they're written down.
Okay.
So that whiteboard thing helped me.
Yeah.
Because it's visual, different colours, quite big. And I only use the whiteboard purely because my notebook is too small and it gets too messy.
Sure.
But there's some other apps that I tried on my laptop that were like mind mapping.
Mm-hmm.
So they were quite useful for building my show in terms of how, okay, so I've got this central theme, how does that come off? So I did find, I think, I can't remember if I've uninstalled them now, but I think I have. But there was mind mapping apps I found quite useful, because then they're bubbles of, you know, ideas that you can shoot off of.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for me, it's all very visual.
Okay.
So yeah, that's the best way for me.
Okay. And what's the end goal? What's the dream?
Oh, to be honest with you, if I'm being really serious, Dave, just world domination and being a multimillionaire, that would be quite nice.
Boom. Got to think big.
Yeah, no, thinking big, just, you know, absolute arena tours, stadiums, merch.
I'm going on the sitcom.
Let's be honest. I would like to go, I've been developing a sitcom for about 2 years now. Still in sort of, it's a long process.
Is that with a broadcaster?
With a production company.
Okay.
And we've been talking to broadcasters. They're just Yeah, we've been pitching and going back and forth with the idea. They really like the idea, but I think, especially now, we meant to have a Skype call today. Actually, I think it's going to be tomorrow. Everything's going to be post Corona. So we're having to rethink the world that our characters are living in and things like that.
Right.
So, yeah, I'd love to get the sitcom off the ground. We've had quite a bit of interest, but it just isn't quite hitting the key things that they're looking for. So we're just trying to sort of tweak it so it does.
Mm-hmm.
So I would really like to get the sitcom off the ground because it was my original idea and my script. And it's something that I've been working on for so long now that I'd really like to see do well.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been focusing on that. And just to develop as a comedian, like I know that sounds really wanky, but of course I was joking before about world domination and all that stuff. But of course, when you're doing something, you want to be the best at it. And that does then mean all of those things. But I'm very realistic in the fact that, like, when I get there, I want to give them what they deserve, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. like I don't want to just get there. I don't want to just do it, because that's why I'm very realistic on the years that I have ahead of me of developing and becoming really good. Like, when you work with someone like Russell Kane, man, oh my God, or Alan or Adam, like, they're great at what they do, but they have so many years behind them. Mm. Of anything that happens in the room, they have got something, they'll pounce on it, they'll react, that stuff can't be learned overnight. So I think I want to be a really good comedian. And I think I've got the bones for that, but I don't think I've got the experience yet. And I think that's where I want to be. I want to be like people walking around, like Rob Beckett. Someone went into labour in one of his shows from laughing early. That's people getting their money's worth. I don't want to trick people into thinking that I'm good.
That's interesting.
I just want to be good.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great way to put it. Okay, and outside of comedy, what do you do to relax and unwind?
And I love being a little housewife. I love doing I love it.
Homebody.
I love being at home. Luckily for me at the moment, I mean, everyone's going into lockdown. This is just me.
Yeah.
This is me minus gigs, basically. I love doing bits and bobs around the house. I can't say that I'm a good cook. My other half's a cook, but I like doing that, sticking my washing on, and I just I just love being at home. I really do.
Are you a binge watcher?
No, I don't ever really watch telly. Just
Do you not watch TV?
I've got too many chores to do.
How many chores could you have to do?
No, I do in the evening. We do like a good series. I love crime. Oh, that's something that I really do like. It's crime. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, crime documentaries and crime podcasts.
Yeah, all the true crime stuff, yeah.
True crime. Yeah,
that's there's loads of that.
Yeah. True crime or good, but then those two hobbies match up my cleaning and true crime, because I've always got a lot of bleach.
Okay, yeah.
And I know how to dispose of a body in many ways now, so
there we
you
go.
Heard it here first.
Okay, detectives in years to come might be listening back to this podcast as evidence.
Yeah, this is going to be evidence on another crime podcast.
Yeah, exactly that. Meta. We're getting very meta now. All right, well, I'm not going to keep you too long because I'm sure you've got plenty of chores to be getting on with.
I have. And my other half just getting angry at me now because I've not done any hoovering today. I'm joking.
I'm going to ask you, final question that I ask all guests on the podcast is, what does the idea of balance mean to you or not?
The idea of balance is not putting all your eggs in one basket. I think there's bigger things, there's more important things than your job. That's been shown recently. I think at the end of the day, when you're old and you're not working anymore, what do you want to talk about? And I think that balance is doing enough to have a good, happy life, but also taking time to appreciate the little things.
Great. Love it. All right. Lovely, Carol. Where can people find out about you on and follow social media and all that jazz?
I am Kelly_Convey, like convey, but I'm not that posh. And it's kellyconvey.com for gig updates in, say, a year's time or something.
In 2022. Yeah, no. We'll be positive. We've got to remain positive. You're going to be playing social distancing gigs very soon.
Oh, don't.
Or, you know, worst case scenario, just doing via Zoom. Look, you know what? Actually, if it's done via Zoom, you'll be able to hear the laughter, surely. You'll be able to hear the laughter. At least you get to hear that laughter.
How many people would need to log in? How many people can you have on a Zoom chat?
I had a Zoom chat the other day. There was about 25 of us. Everyone was talking over each other. I had no idea what anyone was saying. But it was, you know, it's doable. So you never know.
I won't give it a go.
I'm just saying. It's like the end of the tunnel. All right. Lovely speaking to you.
And you, my darling. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'll see you on the other side, man.
I'll see you on the other side. Yeah. Yeah. So there we have it. Kelly Convey. And I think it's quite fitting. We're talking about being very professional, you know, taking a business-like approach to your career, that we conversed over Zoom, the business conferencing software thing that I have mentioned before that I would have loved to invested in prior to my corona. Yeah, you got to keep it lighthearted, and you got to keep it lighthearted. I hope all of you are continuing to do well. I don't know if you were doing well before, but I'm assuming you're doing okay. I'm assuming you have found a way, hopefully, to survive in this new existence. It's all about structure. It's all about the routine. I said this before. That's, well, for me anyway, I've got like an hour by hour routine during the week. Got to go to bed early. Weekend, it goes to shit a little bit, but you know, got to enjoy myself. And my diet's gone right out the window. Been eating a lot of biscuits, a lot of chocolate. Chocolate yogurts, coconut yogurts, all kinds of yogurts, bit of vino. But I'm going to try now and get back on it. I need goals. I need something to look forward to, as in, like, I need a sporting challenge. But it, like, I don't want to book a triathlon now, because I don't know if I'll be able to do it. So, but I need something like that, just to, like, yeah, okay, let's get really fit now. I mean, I've been working out. But yeah, just sort of like at my own casual pace. I'm three seasons into Gomorrah. I think I've talked about Gomorrah before, but I'm absolutely loving that show. It's great. I said to myself, I think I said this on the last show, that I want to watch something uplifting. And Gomorrah definitely isn't that, but it's just a great form of escapism. I watched Tiger King, like every other person on the planet. And I have to say, wasn't that into it. Yeah, it's great characters and some interesting story, but it's, oh god, it's so trashy. And the problem is, with those kind of Netflix documentaries, you know, those sort of serialized shows, you know that you're never going to get satisfaction at the end. It's like Making a Murderer. You know that you're never going to get the ending that you want. Did Carol kill the husband and all this sort of stuff? Yeah, I came away from that thinking, no, this isn't the type of thing that I want to be watching right now. Also, I made myself a list of all the shows and films that I wanted to watch, and I've lost it. I mean, how the hell could I lose it? I'm in a flat here, but it's gone. It's literally like it's got a life of its own, and it's just wandered off. And spent a lot of time on this list, and now I'm lost. I'm lost. I don't know what to watch without my list. I need lists in front of me. I need structure. I need routine. Otherwise, it all goes to shit. But luckily, work-wise, I've got a lot of stuff keeping me busy. I'm writing scripts, which is good. Heard back from a broadcaster on a pilot script that I've written, and I've got some good notes on that. So I'm beavering away with that, which is really good, and developing a couple of others. I've got podcast episodes to edit. So it's good to be busy for sure. And reading, and reading, and reading, and reading. Reading is very good, very good, very, very, very good. Doubling up between the old-fashioned reading of a book and doing Audible and walking and listening, which is a nice combo, isn't it? It's a nice combo. You can see that it's obviously got to me now, being isolated, because I'm I'm conversing with you as if you are here, or just I'm talking at you. So it's all more me just talking at you because it's the first time I've talked to heard my own voice for sort of three weeks now. Obviously, that's not true. Been FaceTiming people. I came off that bloody app house party. Oh, it's just too much. Too much. Just the notifications going off is very intrusive. Deleted that. Don't mind FaceTime every now and then. Voice notes, though. Oh, God, it's just... did I talk about this last time? I can't remember if I did. I must be just repeating myself. See, that's how little is changing each week, that I'm recycling the same dilemmas that I have, the small dilemmas that I'm having in my life during this period. Anyhow, I will leave it there. Thank you for listening. Please do rate, review, subscribe. It does the world of good, and it's great for me. It gives me a little boost. If I see you've written some nice, kind words about the podcast, then that sees me through for the next. That I could feast off that for a good few days. So just bear that in mind. Next time you hear me saying, "Oh, please rate, review, subscribe," and you think, "Ah, fuck that," or you can actually, know what? If it makes Steve feel better, then I'm going to do it. Okay, I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to release a bonus episode in the next few days where I am chatting with Ollie Carter. He's a really great life coach to talk about, get tips for people on, you know, strategies they can put in place during these strange times. So look out for that very soon. All right, guys, stay safe. Until the next one, see you later. Bye.
Balancing Acts is now made in association with The Comedy Crowd, who are a website and community that support independent comedy creators such as myself. I have a Comedy Crowd short, which is a 2-minute video, one of my characters on their website. They showcase the best new videos on Comedy Crowd TV, which is comedycrowdtv.com, and across media platforms. So do go and check them out.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.